Welcome to EncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. EncLive On Air is a podcast from EncLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, EncLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Nabil F. Saba, MD, FACP, Director of the Head and Neck Medical Oncology Program at Winship Cancer Institute of Emory University and Professor in the Department of Hematology and Medical Oncology and Department of Otolaryngology at Emory University School of Medicine, to discuss ongoing research with tipifarnib in HRAS mutant head and neck squamous cell carcinoma. Tipifarnib is a small molecule inhibitor of farnesyl transferase, which is a critical enzyme needed for HRAS activation. In December 2019, the FDA granted fast-track designation to tipifarnib for the treatment of patients with HRAS mutant head and neck squamous cell carcinoma after progression on platinum therapy. Initial findings from the Phase 2 KOTIP-001 trial demonstrated encouraging anti-tumor activity in patients with recurrent and metastatic head and neck cancer with high HRAS mutant variant allele frequency. Now, the agent is under study in the Phase 2 registrational KOTIP-007 trial in patients with HRAS mutant head and neck squamous cell carcinoma. The study has two cohorts, AIM-HN, which will include patients with high and low VAF HRAS mutations, and SEQ-HN. In AIM-HN, patients with HRAS mutant head and neck squamous cell carcinoma will receive tipifarnib monotherapy twice a day orally at 600 mg on days 1 to 7 and days 15 to 28 of 28-day treatment cycles. SEQ-HN is a parallel prospective observation cohort that will compare treatment outcomes with first-line systemic therapy and other demographic and clinical characteristics in patients with HRAS mutant head and neck squamous cell carcinoma who enrolled in AIM-HN and a matched control set of patients with HRAS wild-type tumors. In our exclusive interview, Saba shed light on the implications of targeting HRAS in head and neck squamous cell carcinoma, detailed the data that has been reported to date with tipifarnib, and shared his expectations for the ongoing KOTIP-007 trial. What do we know about HRAS mutations in head and neck cancer?
So HRAS mutation is a very interesting story in head and neck cancer. You know, we've known for a while that HRAS is mutated in this disease, and the mutations are not really that frequent. About 4%, maybe to 5% of head and neck cancers have HRAS mutation. The story of RAS is really goes much longer than, you know, what we've seen in head and neck cancer. The RAS gene has been, you know, identified and studied since the mid-60s. And the attempts at targeting the RAS gene have been ongoing for quite some time, especially in the mid-90s. But those efforts have not really resulted in major changes in standard of care because they were mostly focused on tumors that had KRAS or NRAS mutations. And those tumors were not really amenable to farnesyl transferase inhibitors because these oncogenes had other ways of basically escaping from farnesylation. And so HRAS, on the other hand, basically relies mostly on the farnesyl transferase activity and does not have the ability to bypass this farnesylation. And so targeting HRAS resulted in interesting positive outcome for patients with head and neck cancer, but also for other tumors as well. And so this field of farnesyl transferase inhibitors, if you like, was revisited and revived lately with head and neck cancer, but we're seeing also in other tumors, this has been also reported to be of interest as well, especially in urothelial malignancies and in thyroid cancers.
Now, before we go into those trials, what is the prognosis of patients with HRAS mutations versus wild-type HRAS?
So the prognosis of patients with HRAS mutations versus wild-type HRAS in head and neck cancer has not really been studied very well. I don't believe we have a good data on that. But those particular patients basically carry usually a certain clinical characteristics. For example, they tend to be more commonly patients with oral cavity cancers, even though that is not really necessarily the case. Patients in certain parts of the world basically have increased frequency of HRAS mutations, such as India, And those patients have, I think, a higher proportion of oral cavity cancers. But we're seeing that the HRAS alteration cuts across different subtypes of head and neck cancer, including HPV-positive disease. In the trial, the tipifarnib phase 2 trial, some of the patients that benefited were actually patients with HPV-positive cancer. So I cannot say that the HRAS mutation per se fits a certain anatomic characteristic or a certain, you know, other specific characteristics such as HPV.
So starting with the phase 2 KO-TIP-001 trial with tipifarnib in solid tumors, what did we learn from that trial overall and then specifically about the agent's activity in patients with head and neck cancer?
Yeah, so this was a phase 2 trial that basically enrolled patients with HRAS alteration. And basically, as we said, some solid tumors harbor this alteration. And the trial focused on urothelial malignancies, head and neck cancer. In addition to, there was a cohort of saliva gland cancers that was also included. And the results were reported in the last ASCO meeting. And specifically for the head and neck group, we had about 21 patients who were treated with the tipifarnib. And the response rates were close to 50%, which is really fairly impressive in a patient population that was heavily pretreated. Of note also is that the patient population also differed in terms of anatomic location. There were patients with HPV negative disease, patients with oral cavity and other anatomic locations, but also patients with HPV positive disease. Most of the patients had prior exposure to platinum-based therapy. A significant proportion, less than half or so, were also had exposure to immune checkpoint inhibitors. And so the take-home message is that this patient population was heavily pretreated. Despite the fact that this is a heavily pretreated patient population, the responses that were observed were really impressive, of close to 49%. And more importantly, I think the duration of response to tipifarnib was close to 14 to 15 months. And we don't usually talk about duration of response that long, unless we're talking about first-line therapy for squamous cell cancer of the head and neck. And more specifically, when we talk more recently about immunotherapy for these patients, those patients who respond to immunotherapy usually tend to have this long duration of response. In other words, the quality of response is really better as we're seeing more lately. But despite the fact that this is a heavily pretreated population, the duration of response for this population was significantly longer. Also, when these patients were compared to a cohort of patients who did not receive the drug, but were treated with standard of care, the progression-free survival seemed to also be improved with the tipifarnib. Of course, those were not exactly randomized, you know, comparisons in a randomized trial, but nevertheless, they suggest that the activity of this agent is significant in improving the tumor control and improving the survival for these patients. And this hopefully will lead to, you know, approval, hopefully, of this agent in the treatment of head and neck cancer. In terms of bladder cancer, the responses were somewhat lower. I think about 29% of patients responded to the treatment. And in saliva gland cancers, I think even though the number of patients were fairly small, the response rate was about 8%. I think only one patient had a documented response, even though more than half of the patient did have stable disease. Again, a small number of patients. This is a heterogeneous group of diseases as well with different histologies. And so the most impressive really of all of these three disease sites is really the squamous cell cancer of the head and neck, where I think this approach is making significant difference.
And as you're well aware, it's since been taken forward into the phase 2 AIM trial. What will we learn from that trial?
Well, I think we will dig deeper into the types of patients who are benefiting more with the tipifarnib, and we will dig deeper into the molecular characteristics of these patients. The inclusion criteria on this trial was eased in terms of the degree of variant allele frequency that was more restrictive in the earlier phase of the enrollment, at least in the previous trial. But currently, the umbrella, if you like, is bigger, to include patients with less variant allele frequency in their tumors. And so we will wait and see what the results will show. And certainly this trial will further our understanding of the role of these farnesyl transferase inhibitors in the treatment of this very particular disease.
So would you say it's fair to say that the field is beginning to carve out a role for precision medicine?
The oncology field in general has been carving a role for precision medicine. Certainly in the head and neck squamous cell arena, we felt left alone for a while because if you look at a trial such as the MATCH study, the proportion of squamous cell cancers are not really that great. But yet when we see a story like the story of HRAS mutation and farnesyl transferase inhibitors in the subgroup of patients in head and neck cancer, it really proves the point that this is not necessarily the case, even in squamous cell carcinomas and even in a disease that has, where molecular targeting has been elusive for a long time. And I think this is an example that with research and with further understanding of the biology of the disease, and let's not forget that, you know, the work on targeting RAS has spanned several decades. So this is not something that has been discovered recently, but certainly it is refreshing to see that this is the case.
And as you mentioned, tipifarnib does have a fast-track designation from the FDA in HRAS mutant head and neck cancer. Are you hopeful that we'll see an approval in the coming months?
I'm hopeful that will be the case. I think the data is fairly compelling, given that this is in a very heavily pretreated patient population, and given that these patients have failed multiple lines of therapy. And given the degree of response and the duration of response, I think despite the fact that this is a rare disease, we've seen time and time again the FDA approve agents even for very rare diseases when clinical activity is proven. And because of this, my belief is that this will happen.
Is there anything else that you wanted to emphasize?
I think many of us are basically interested in further elucidating the interaction between HRAS and EGFR in head and neck cancer, because there is preclinical data clearly showing that when you introduce HRAS into at least preclinical models, the tumor becomes resistant to cetuximab, and those models that had the HRAS mutations were also resistant to cetuximab in the PDX models. However, when you reverse that process, you restore cetuximab sensitivity. And so there is seems to be a delicate interaction between the EGFR and HRAS, and you know, in head and neck cancer, as you know, EGFR inhibition plays a major role in the management of this disease. So we and others are interested in you know, deciphering more this relation, this relationship. Data from our lab has shown that the combination of both agents in preclinical model and PDX models does seem to be beneficial and additive, does have an anti-tumor additive effect compared to each of the agents alone. And so, you know, the HRAS story, therefore, may not just be restricted to HRAS mutant disease, but that remains to be seen and remains to be proven further.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science summits and institutional perspectives in cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.